Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Catch it! Out court. It's a flash and out. Good pressure by England's opening bowlers here. Harmison and Hoggard. Giving him out. Sawan goes for a double duck in the test match. Well, it's rolled back onto the stumps. Harmison picks up another wicket.
Harmison, he's on fire. He's enthusiastic. He's been very accurate this morning. He's created pressure and he's given England so far the upper hand.
Gone straight up and caught. Could not evade it on this occasion, Ridley Jacobs.
Catch it!
Gone. That's 5 wickets for Steve Harmison.
Good bowling, this. It's a way to bowl to the tailenders.
Yeah!
Very easily caught. That's Jastrophic at first slip, who's made that look supremely easy.
Yeah! That'll do it. Jastrophic takes the catch. Harmison becomes the most successful bowler ever at Sabina Park. 12 overs and 3 balls, 8 maidens no less, 7 wickets for 12.
Grievous Bodily Harmison. That's what it became. The famous day when Steve Harmison blew away the West Indies at that famous ground, Sabina Park, in Kingston, Jamaica. West Indies 311-47, England 339-20 for no wickets. Harmy did his damage in the second innings, 7 for 12. I mean, they are staggering figures, and it actually forced a public apology from the West Indies team for their poor performance. Unprecedented, I think, in the history of West Indies cricket. It really was a humiliating day for West Indies. Of course, there was a sense of revenge, I think, for England on the back of so many exasperating defeats from the great sides of the 70s and 80s and indeed parts of the 90s too. Quite a story to tell, and Steve Harmison is with it to tell us now. Harmy, hello.
Hello, Mark. Yes, it was nice goosebumps listening to some of the commentary back.
Yeah, well, that was the TV commentary. We covered it for TalkSport, actually. And the unusual thing about that tour was that Tony Gregg worked with us. We had Michael Atherton emerging as a young commentator, Chris Cowdery, Jack Bannister, I think Jeffrey Boycott, and Greggy and yours truly were all covering it and all equally thrilled by your brilliant performance. There was a headline at the time about Harmison. Listen to this. His unpredictability could be frustrating, but perhaps the truth of his career and his personality was that he was somebody at his best out of the limelight. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. I wasn't somebody who chased the limelight. Wasn't somebody who, if you watch again, I was quite embarrassed coming off the field when players, you know, the teammates were telling me that to lead them off. And I still am quite happy being out of the spotlight, out of the way, if I can possibly help it. But it was at a time where I think England were just starting to evolve, and the characters that were in there as well. There was a lot of similar characters.
Explain that. Because Matthew Hoggard, Andrew Flintoff, Simon Jones were the other seamers.
Yeah, and that was the first time, along with Ashley Giles, that all five of us played together. And obviously, that was built on 2005. Culminating in 2005, but we were all similar characters from working class areas, hard working upbringing, hard working parents, So we had this bond that we were very, very close, but we brought so much difference to Michael and to Duncan and what they were trying to build as a bowling unit and as a team unit. So from off the field we were very, very similar. But on the field, we had so many different qualities that yes. made us as good as we were.
You mentioned Michael Vaughan and Duncan Fletcher there. So you had this five-man attack that, as you say, went on not just to win against Australia in that famous summer of 2005, but also beat South Africa in South Africa the previous winter. And you all offered something different. That seemed to me the beautiful thing about the attack. Matthew Hoggard outswing, Andrew Flintoff, raw pace and sideways movement, mainly off the seam, some late swing too, and explosive. Simon Jones, fast and full, and really could make the ball swing so late. Ashley Giles, accurate. And then you, with your alarming bounce and strange differentials. You know, there were days when you looked in perfect sync and pretty much unplayable, and days when you're action looked as if it just couldn't work itself out. And that was a funny thing. What was that, simply just you and how you felt that day, or were there imperfections in your action that you found difficult to control?
I think there was imperfections in the action which were difficult to control, but what made it on some days devastating for the opposition. I always joked and said, if I've got no idea what's happening, what chance is 22 yards away when it's 90 mile an hour? And I remember a game in Perth, where one that Alex Tuley will not fondly remember. But I remember losing my run-up, and it was just, I got the yips, couldn't run in. But for some reason, I was bowling 10 mile an hour quicker, and Ricky Ponting and Damian Martin were at the other end. And I remember walking back, and I said to Ricky, I says, I've got no idea when I'm letting go of this. And he just looked at me and he just said, it's not fun for us down at this end on the fast bouncy pitch, because we've got no idea what length you're going to bowl, when you're going to bowl it, how fast it's going to come. And I think that was the unpredictability I had throughout my whole career. But I would say there was a few imperfections in the action from a repeatability point of view, which was, I always believed, it was the fun of the fair. I always said, from a mental point of view, I was quite strong in a way that if I did bowl a one that wasn't very good, or I did bowl a spell that wasn't very good, I was quite good at getting over it very, very quickly and being comfortable that the next spell is a new one. And if I get it right, I'm doing my job for the team.
All right, let's remind everybody of the game. West Indies batted first. Devon Smith made 108. I remember that innings very well. A lot of pull strokes that he nailed. Brian Lara just 23, Sarwar and LBW to Matthew Hoggard, no score. And the other runs came from Ryan Hines, the left-hander, he made 84, 38 for Ridley Jacobs, and then 20 for Tino Best towards the end. 311 for West Indies. You got Chris Gayle, bowled him out actually, and who you got a second wicket? Tino Best, LBW, Steve Harmison. So three for Hoggard, two for you, one for Flintoff, two for Jones, two for Giles. Then England batted. There was 50s for Mark Butcher and Nasser Hussain, 46 for Flintoff, 20 odd each for Chris Reid and Ashley Giles. And you made 13. Well played, Harmy. There were 60 extras. 60.
Yeah, that. I remember that. There was, we company had the extras as our top score.
Yeah.
And I remember in the first innings, the pitch was just, it just felt too bouncy. It really felt too bouncy. You were bowling half volleys, and Devon Smith was cutting them for four. And you just think, I can't bowl any fuller than this. I really can't. And it wasn't until later on in the game when the ball didn't bounce as much and we were more dangerous.
Well, England made 339, so hardly had a lead on West Indies 311. Do you remember how the pitch looked? Because I do.
Yeah, there was a shine on it.
That's right. Black and shiny, wasn't it?
It was a shine. There was a proper, not seen a pitch out here for quite some time like that. There was. And I do believe that by the time the West Indies had come to terms with what we were as a side and how good we were as a side, they were 3-0 down.
Right. I think that's true. Yeah, I was going to come to the rest of the series in a second, but England did win it 3-0. So not much in it. First innings in the first test in Jamaica. And West Indies come out with Chris Gayle and Devon Smith. They're going fine. They get to 13. And you strike to get Gayle again. So let's just remind ourselves of that moment.
Catch it!
Yeah! Oh, caught. Grimthorpe. Early loss again. Once more, Gale goes cheaply. It's 13 for one. It's a flash and out. Good pressure by England's opening bowlers here, Harmison and Hoggard.
So that's the great Tony Kosier with David Lloyd there. And the first strike, and particularly Gale, very important.
Yeah, hugely important. We knew, you always know that Chris can get you off to a blistering start. And he's, it sets a message to the dressing room that if you get Chris Gale early, then all of a sudden, you know, the next batsmen are coming in. And Chris was a huge larger than life character. And if he got you, then you were always chasing the game, trying to bring the game back. So in that series, we did well to get on top of Chris Gale. Mm. But I think I can't carry on without mentioning sort of night before when it was in the dark, Nasser and Butch, they got pelters off Edwards and Best, Tino bowl quickly, Fidel Edwards bowl quickly. And in that group, we had three experienced players at 3, 4, 5. And boy, did we need them in Jamaica. We needed them on the whole trip. But I think when you talk about how that side evolved, it started from a concrete base with three older men in, senior figures in the middle of Hussein, Butcher, Hussein and Thorpe. And Butch got banged on the arm a couple of times. I think he had to go off to hospital. And at that, we were teetering at the end of the, if you remember, it was dark. Umpires didn't take us off. And if we didn't have experienced characters in the team then it could have been a whole lot different.
Okay. I did read about that pounding they took, and the report said it was like the good old days, as if this was Holding and Garner and company. So I think you've summed up that very well. Ramesh Sarwan was a good player and often a thorn in England's side. Right-hander, very organised, neat and tidy player. He'd gone for a duck in the first innings. Here we go again.
Giving him out. Sarwan goes for a double duck in the test match. What a start for England.
A double duck. I haven't heard it called that before. It was a pair. And obviously, a great wicket, that Sarwan.
Yeah, it was a good player, great player, was Ramesh Sarwan. And there was pressure put on Darrell Harper. Nice man, Darrell Harper. You've always felt as though he was going to give you one from a bowler's point of view. And if you remember right, it's gone sort of angling in towards his pads. Looked as though it was a bit high, could have possibly have gone down. But it was also, bat was close to sort of ball and pad, and it looped up to Nasser Hussain at short leg. And I think the pressure of, has he inside edged it? Well, it's been caught. Is it LBW? And I think Darrell just put his finger up and thought, well, it's got to be one of them, and off you go.
The days before DRS.
Yeah.
Okay, and now we go to Shiv Chanderpool.
Well, it's rolled back onto the stumps. Harmison picks up another wicket. West Indies in dire straits now. They still trail by 13. They've lost three second innings wickets.
Just feel its extra bounce again. Hustle on to Shiv Narayan Chanderpool.
The late, great Bob Willis with Ian Bishop there. And Chanderpool, the ultimate limpet at the crease. Very hard to remove.
Yeah, hugely hard to remove. And thankfully, a bit later on in his career, he came to play at Durham in a successful time. And he was a fast bowler's dream if you were on his team, because he knew if he got past 20, 30 balls, he was there for the afternoon. And he could block it. And he could hang around. And it was a huge wicket. An element of luck. Defended it back onto his heel and it rolled back his legs and onto the stump. So, you know, we talk about great spells and great days out, and you do have to have an element of luck. Talked about the Darrell Harper with Sarwan going my way, and that one certainly did as well.
Yeah, but before you got Ridley Jacobs, we ought to say that the big wicket was claimed by Matthew Hoggard, who had Brian Lara caught it slip by Freddie. Lara, I think, had a finger injury, as I remember. Is that right?
Yeah.
Had you hit him?
I hit him in the first innings, and he came in at number five. He came in one less at number five, I think it was. And then I hit him on the same finger in Trinidad as well, just before lunch. to get him out, but he did. He batted at five, if I remember, in that series, in that second innings of that test match.
Yes, he did. Okay. So the other one to have gone to Simon Jones was Ryan Hines, caught behind the wicket by Chris Reid, who seemed to be set in the job then. A wonderful gloveman, the Nottinghamshire captain later in his life. And then you were back in action against Ridley Jacobs.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Gone straight up and caught. Could not evade it on this occasion, Ridley Jacobs.
Just have a look at this. Tucking him up, no room. Getting big on him again. Straight off the hand, up in the air. Nasser Hussain. I'm going to have that one.
Ian Botham there with Michael Holding. How did that wicket fall?
Yeah, that was a brute, to be honest. That bounced. And he to be fair to Ridley, throughout that test series, he was like a voodoo doll. We just kept hitting him in the rib cage or on the backside. Remember, Ridley, he was a big, strong man. Yeah. And he just kept getting hit in the backside or hitting the ribs. Me and Freddie peppered him. and he just couldn't get out of the way of it. There was a year or two later, I remember, had this conversation with Brad Hogg on the YouTube stuff. And he was being giving me some stick. And getting himself going at Lords, and it was a similar ball. Just couldn't get out of the way of it, and it would hit him in the throat if it hadn't sort of getting to the glove first. And it was when you get deliveries like that, it's a great feeling as a fast bowler to see the ball just loop up in the air to short leg. And just before this series, Nasser did write in his newspaper column. He said it was the best seat in the house in Jamaica, and you wouldn't get an easier catch than that one.
Okay, well, Tino Best had made 20 in the first innings, which was, I know, very frustrating for you at the time. Andrew Flintoff christened him, mind the windows, Tino, for a joke at Lord's he had with him, but you decided you just had enough of him, full stop. Here we go.
Catch it!
Gone. That's 5 wickets for Steve Harmison.
Good bowling, this. It's a way to bowl to the tailenders. They don't like it in there. Well, good players don't. Tailenders hate it. In England, in a very healthy position, leading West Indies by just 13, it's 41-7.
And from Tino Best to Adam Sanford.
Yes!
Very easily caught, astroscopic at first slip, has made that look supremely easy. No feet involved in this shot, but a low catch, comfortably taken.
David Gower joining in the commentary. Now you're really on fire. I just remember it so well. You were so smooth, you were cruising in. And I bet you wished you could have bowled all day.
I felt as though I could have bowled all day. In the heat of Jamaica, it was red hot, 12 and a half overs. I could have gone on for another 6 or 7. But from getting Ridley Jacobs out, every ball I felt as though this is going to be nicked. It's going to go straight to Chris Reid, or it's going to go to first slip. I didn't feel at one point that I wasn't in control of everything I was doing. And when I did get Best, and
Adam Sanford.
I just felt as though that ball was the I bowled that ball continuously, and it was like slow motion in your feelings. And not many times as a bowler you get that feeling, and what a feeling it was, because you don't feel as you're using any energy. No. You just feel as though I'm sort of not only in total control, but I'm going to get a wicket with every ball. And yes. I remember Trez running up to me and saying, "I've never felt as though in a test match where I feel every ball is coming to me." So it was just in sync.
Yeah, the wind beneath your wings. And so West Indies in absolute disarray. 43 for 9, and Harmison runs in to Fidel Edwards.
That'll do it. Triscothic takes the catch. Harmison becomes the most successful bowler ever at Sabina Park. What a magnificent effort from him. 12 overs and 3 balls, 8 maidens no less, 7 wickets for 12.
Yeah, what a performance. England won the test by 10 wickets and went 1-0 up. I remember the party at the hotel by the pool that night. All of the great and good from the ECB and from Sky had turned up as they were planning a bit of a heist on the television deal. And everybody just joined in the party. It was madness. Was that the best you ever bowled?
Yeah, up there, I think. The next test match at Trinidad wasn't too bad either. I felt I just carried it on at Trinidad, and I have to mention the party. We hadn't, as a unit, a whole team had worked so hard for 3.5 weeks, 4 weeks. Not much alcohol consumed before the first test match, and I think during that party we probably drank more in the next 12 hours than we would have done in the 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks previous. And I remember Mark Butcher sitting in, sort of as the sun was coming back up underneath a palm tree, just playing the guitar, and it was there was magical memories and that sort of celebration afterwards.
I'll read you a few headlines. The Daily Mirror: the day sport was turned upside down. Super Steve Harmison was walking on sunshine after his career best figures of 7 for 12 fired England to a sensational 10-wicket triumph, and it had grievous bodily Harmison himself gasping. Harmison said, "I could not believe what was happening out there. I feel numb." The Sun: the 6'5" Darren Quickie reduced the West Indies batsman to quivering wrecks with his pace, bounce and aggression, and Brian Lara's side were blown away for 47. The Windies batsman had neither the technical nous nor the stomach to survive against Harmy. That must just feel amazing, when you knew so much about the history of West Indian fast bowling, to be up there with headlines yourself. Fantastic.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, and we didn't probably realize at the time, but we were onto something special. We went on from there, and as a group and as a unit, not just the bowling attack but the whole team, I think we transformed as a side from that day in Jamaica, when I think the belief in us, like we said before, it culminated in 2005, and we had, you know, players dropped off by the wayside and new ones come in. But I think it was the day that first test in the West Indies was really the day that things started to happen for English cricket.
Well, you went on to win the series 3-0. You bowled very well, I remember, in Trinidad in the next match. I must admit, I think you had a 6-for haul, as I recall, in one innings. Am I right there?
Yeah.
Yes, here it is. 6-for-61. You got in the first innings. You bowled them out for 208.
You got off to a great start. I think they were 80 for none, 80 for one. Chris Gayle smashed it. Came out, like I mentioned before about Chris, and then we got 3 wickets, literally right on the cusp of lunch. And I remember getting Brian out, but I think it was his second or third ball, bouncer, and he gloved it, hit his dodgy finger straight in front of his nose, and it looped up to Ashley Giles at gully. And again, we walk off, and we think, right, we've got the West Indies back where we want them again.
So you were player of the match in consecutive test matches, Harmy. These were the days of your lives.
Yep. Very much so. And
six in the next match in Barbados. 6 wickets in the next match. 2 3-wicket hauls as well.
But that was a great game for one. What on the field coming off the field with Graham Thorpe. I think when I came off there, I was like, wow, I've just done something special, and we have just done something special. You know, me and Simon put 80 or 90 on with Graham Thorpe to get us, I think, a 2-run lead. And that, for me, was one of the best hundreds I had ever witnessed as a from an English player.
Thorpe, you mean 119 unbeaten? Yeah.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, and you know, me and Simon didn't get many, if any, but the way he marshalled us, the way he went about it, and you could there was a if I felt as though they had. You were in a zone with your eyes on in Jamaica. For me personally, I looked into Thorpe's eyes, and he didn't know I was there in between overs. Really, he was so determined to get that 100, and that's what I mean before. It's just the whole cross of the group. You know, Simon got 5 for in Trinidad. Freddie got his first 5 wicket haul in Barbados. Hoggard's hat trick, and Thorpe's 100 was. That's why we won 3-0.
Fantastic. We would be remiss not to talk about the fourth test because West Indies batted first in Antigua at the old recreation ground you were playing then, much more atmospheric ground than where they play now. And they declared 751 for 5.
That was madness.
And you bowled, it was madness. You bowled 37 overs, Harmy, 1 for 92. And Brian Lara yet again broke the world record and finished 400 not out.
It was unbelievable. The stories from that are endless, but I remember right at the very start, walking onto the field on morning of day one, Sir Ian Botham, or Lord Botham as he is now, pulled me over, Andy Roberts standing in the middle of the wicket, and he, well-bowled young man, and I was like, pleased to meet you. The history of, just it was just another great I was in the company of. And he said, but you'll not win 4-0. And I just burst out laughing. I says, what on earth makes you think that this batting unit can handle us and we're not going to win 4-0? He says, because I'm the groundsman here and I prepared this pitch. My heart sank. Didn't bounce above shin high. Brian, I'm still convinced Brian was out early doors, I think in the second or third over, that he nicked it. But again, another piece of history which was unbelievable. But Freddie never forgave me for getting warned off in that game. I've done some unthinkable things to my best mate, Andrew Flintoff.
What do you mean, warned off?
Well, I got a warning for running on a pitch on day one, and I got a warning for running on a pitch on day two, and I forgot about day one, and I obviously got done again on day three because that was our third new ball, our third day of bowling. And I think it was Alim Dar just said to me, I was Billy Bowden, Alim Dar, I can't remember which umpire it was, just said, yeah, off you go, you can't bowl anymore. To which, obviously, I had 1 for 92 at the time. And unfortunately, the big lad from Lancashire had 1 for 96 at the time. And when Vaughan asked him to take the next over, he got dispatched for 4, gone for 100. And I was standing at mid-off, wetting myself with laughter, because obviously the pitch was flat and he had to continue bowling. And he wasn't best pleased that I'd getting out of the gallon, okay. The 100.
Okay. I just want to read you one more headline, if I may, because I think it's the best of the lot for you anyway. In the Jamaica Observer, Garfield Myers was the writer. More down to earth than the Mirror in the Sun, but I think almost more interesting. As England closed in for the kill, the post-mortems began. A popular knee-jerk assessment, as the shock set in, was that the West Indies had spinelessly capitulated, as they have done countless times in recent years. But that view completely ignores the quality of Steve Harmison. I really like that. I think that's a tremendous bit of reflection by a journalist on your performance. So, Harmy, this was, as you say, the start of something very special that in the end led to winning the Ashes with that same attack and winning in South Africa. You were very well led by Michael Vaughan.
Yeah, we were. He was an unbelievable leader. He had us all sort of where he wanted us. We were all in tip-top form, fitness. The way we were as a unit was no coincidence that Michael's relaxed manner needed that. We needed that from going from the sort of the way Nasser Hussain had given us an excellent education, I think, in the game. And I think we had just sort of moved beyond that. But Michael, you can't speak highly enough of how he was as a person, but also as a captain, because he could deal with Hoggard in a different way. He could deal with Harmison, in a different way. He would deal with Jones. And then the same with Freddie. And he knew what qualities Ashley Giles had as a person and as a cricketer, as well as himself in ridiculous form off the back of a an Ashes trip to Australia, which gave him a huge amount of confidence in his own career. So I think we all pressed the buttons at the right time. We were all in the best form of our lives, and we needed a leader who could just manoeuvre us. And yeah, you are only as good as your bowling attack as a captain. He had a fine bowling attack, but he was also a very, very good leader. He was a fine leader.
Oh, Harvey, lovely to talk to you, as ever, modest and happy to hand much of the praise to others.
Well, that's it for another edition of Following On. Thanks for listening. And if you ever have any ideas for guests or have questions for the likes of Steve Harmison or Neil Manthorpe, feel free to tweet me at Fulham John or via at @cricket_TS. And either I or one of the team will make sure that your questions are read out on the show at the earliest convenience. Also, please take the time to leave a review. And if you're already a subscriber, then tell your mates to do the same. And if you want more content from the likes of Steve Harmison, then head over to his YouTube channel and tell him I sent you. Thanks for listening to Following On.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.